It is Your Money. I'm Susie Jones, along with Bruce Helmer and Peg Webb. We are dedicating this hour to your financial picture, your financial future, visualizing your financial future. Happy to have you with us. And if you have any questions throughout the hour, 651-461-9226. Here is the founder of Wealth Enhancement, Bruce Helmer, and Senior Vice President and Financial Advisor, Peg Webb. Welcome to both of you.
Good morning, Susie. Good morning, Bruce.
Hello, Peg Webb. Hello, Susie Jones. As always, great to be with you. Hello, listeners. Thank you for joining us today. Hey, Peg, today's topic, I think it's actually interesting and very relevant, but it may seem a little new agey or a little different, but it's really, I think, going to be just kind of a different way of looking at something and talking about things that we talk to our clients and our prospects all the time. We're going to talk about visualizing your financial future. But I also thought, Peg, before we jump into the topic, it might be worthwhile to talk a little bit about recovery in the markets that we've seen in recent weeks. We always talk about things when it's going bad. I've joked on the show before that Susie and other media people call me up for comments when the market's going down, but nobody ever talks about it when markets are going up. We should maybe talk about it a little bit.
I totally agree. It's been quite the ride this year so far, just a little bit rocky. And I said, you know, at the end of this week, if we're in positive territory, I kind of did a little dance because I know people were worried year to date, and it's been very volatile, but the Dow Jones kind of eked up to 0.3% year to date, which is a positive number. Same with the S&P 500, 1.3%. The NASDAQ is still in little tiny negative territory, which is 0.5, almost close to even. Now, that doesn't mean, my husband actually reminded me this morning that in December, the Dow was at 45,000, you know, so I'm not saying that it's back to its highest high, but year to date, Bruce, this actually feels really good.
Yeah, and I talked about it at the time, and I'm not tooting my horn, I'm not boasting, but at the time when it was down and we were referencing it on the show, and I was, you know, talking to the media in a lot of interviews, I volunteered the fact that, you know, intellectually people say they understand buy low and sell high, but they don't always do it because emotions get in the way. Fear, greed, in the case of a down market, it's fear. But when the markets were down, you know, between 10 and 15% earlier this year, I volunteered to anyone that I talked to that I was putting money into the market, which I did. I'm very glad I did. Now, again, it's a small, short sample size, but I told everybody that asked me, I don't know where it's going. It might go lower, but I do know it's a lot lower than where it was, and I feel like it's an opportunity. It's on sale. I'm buying at a discount, and over the long term, I'll be glad I made that decision. And in the short term, I'm certainly glad I made that decision. So, yeah, things market-wise are looking a lot better than they were 6 weeks ago. We've had a nice little run here. Let's segue into the topic. So, Peg, you are as good as anybody that I've ever known at visualizing, not just financial goals, but just visualization, life goals, things you want to accomplish, life goals, live it goals. Some people use bucket list. I like live it list. You are a you're a visionary, and today we want to talk about using that skill, visualizing your future, and visualizing retirement, and how that can actually help you achieve the success and hit the goals and live the dreams that you want to.
Yeah, I actually love this topic because, and I coach my clients for decades of time about visualizing the future. And in more simple form, it's WDIW. What do I want? I mean, can you possibly look out in the future and just say, okay, what do I want? Now, we're going to talk today about retirement. And in some cases, that's decades of time for people. And our clients, too. A lot of them have retired, and we've worked with them. But they were a lot younger, Bruce, when they came and saw us. And we had these conversations about, you know, what do you want? And that is the start of, in my definition, being a visionary. Like you're starting to think ahead. So one of the reasons that people don't save for retirement when they're young is they find it very difficult to imagine what their future might look like. And I get that. You know, there's people out there that can create their own future, meaning I knew people at a very young age that seemed to have it all together, right? They just said, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do this. Now, sometimes they just copied like an aunt or uncle or the makeup in that particular family. That's the default. That's what you're going to do. So their vision was really just taking on maybe their parents or somebody that they actually really admired and copied. That's not necessarily a visionary. That this is more of a phenomenon, like it's a psychological, cognitive thing that people have. And one of the things when it comes to retirement is the present bias. So we tend to value immediate rewards more highly than future rewards, which leads to procrastination. And I would say more people, I this is just me talking, Bruce, in Susie, is I think there's more procrastinators than there are people that, you know, that want to do things ahead of time. And secondly, the lack of emotional connection to your future self. Like how many people can really look out and say, this is what I want to do. So your brain is a big component of this, and it tends to think about the future self in ways that are similar maybe to somebody else or maybe just a stranger. Maybe you saw somebody on TV, Bruce.
Yeah, you know, and again, this is just kind of a different way of saying what we've talked about before, but almost 100% of the time, Peg, when I'm talking to a potential new client, I talk about these things. I ask them, what are your goals and objectives for the future? What does your retirement look like? When do you want to retire? What's going to be your sense of purpose or your sense of identity when you retire? How's it going to change your marriage, your lifestyle? You know, I ask those questions. And we've talked about this a lot before. You get certain people that smile and light up, and the questions resonate with them, and they've obviously considered it, thought about it, planned for it, and they know exactly what you're talking about. But oftentimes, I get the blank deer in the headlights stare, and they haven't considered it. They don't know what I'm talking about. And this is when I say our job is not just numbers and finance. Our job is to then help them determine what is important to them and what do they want to accomplish. I don't know how I can give good financial advice to somebody that doesn't have any idea what they want, because the strategies and the planning and even the investment asset allocation is all going to be driven by answers to those questions. And if they don't know, we have to, I see it as our job to help them make that determination. Peg?
Yeah, and Bruce, a lot of times it's not just a single person that we're talking to, right? It's two different people that maybe have a different vision or a different idea of what's going to happen in the future. You know, I find that a lot of times one person is very optimistic and the other one isn't, you know, so you got to blend those two together. And I like what you said in that you lead with these questions. And I also wanted to hear a lot about, you know, their life and their vision and what they want to do in the future. And sometimes the people would say, what does this have to do with, you know, the numbers? Because we do get a lot of engineers and people that really want to dive into the numbers, but it's hard to get that vision or that what I call a movie kind of going in your head. Once you decide you have a vision and you have something that you're working towards, then, you know, is that something that you both, you know, want to consider doing together? Or you can have independent, you know, visions of what you have retirement. I find that the most fun part of our job is kind of walking through with people and seeing what they want to do and if their money will handle that, or set goals as to how can we make all this happen. One thing that I want to say is I do feel like I've always had kind of these pictures running in my head. And one of my goals was, and I've often said this on the show, that when I would be driving to work, and I had a good 45-minute drive to work, and it allowed me to think about the day and what I'm going to do. But I, in the summertime in Minnesota, I would see that at the end of this country road, because I lived in the country, this woman would set up this stand, and she would be selling flowers and fruits and things from the garden. And this is like 7 a.m. in the morning. She's already out there. And I thought, you know what? Here's my goal. And here's where I'm copying and taking a vision of somebody that I thought, this woman looks happy, right? And she didn't, she looked like she was maybe 50 years old to me. And I said, okay, at 55, I actually want the confidence and the savings that I need to save to be able to do that. I just thought that was just such a great day. The sun's coming up, you know, the weather is beautiful. That, so that stuck with me. And that vision just kind of drove me to being financially independent and being able to do that at 55. Now, I enjoyed my job so much that I didn't do that at 55, but it was in my young years, that was actually a motivator for me. Bruce?
So a couple things I want to just dig a little deeper on. You had mentioned that we tend to value immediate awards more than future rewards, and I think that's true, and you also talked about how often or most of the time we're not working with one person, we're working with partners, either married or partner in a permanent relationship, and one might be a saver, one might be a spender, or they might have different goals and objectives, and again, part of our job, and I agree, Peg, a joyful part of our job, part that makes my heart happy, is to find the compromise and to find solutions that satisfy both partners, even though they may not see the world exactly. And again, one of the big ones, there's oftentimes this we either have to save and invest for our future or live for today, go do things and spend money, take trips, take vacations, like it's an either or choice. And it's not, you can do both. With proper planning, commitment to strategies, you can live for today because, again, the older I get, the more I realize none of us is promised tomorrow. But for the grace of God, any of us could lose our health tomorrow, lose our life tomorrow. So I agree that you have to live in the present, but you still can plan for the future, and it's not mutually exclusive. You can do both, and again, find compromises with people that might have different ideas or different goals and objectives. I also want to share this really quick. So even as we're talking about visualization, a really good client of mine just sent me a picture of himself in a fishing boat. That's his retirement visualization. It made me laugh, and it's a great example. It's a great picture of him in a boat fishing. So Peg, so how do we do this? So we can talk about this visualization. Any tips, any ideas, any suggestions on how people can do this and use this to help them achieve their dreams?
Yeah, so there are approaches and tools that we coach our clients on. And I kind of mentioned one already, meaning visualizing your future self. So I as I drove by that fruit stand, you know, that was just me with that vision. And it was just like cement because it just gave me a timeline, and it gave me just this confidence of freedom from having to make this drive-in every day, you know, as the traffic was bad. But when you think about it, and you think about retirement, you know, what's going to make you happy? That's just a good question to ask yourself. You know, what's going to make you happy? And in retirement, what are you going to do? I mean, maybe you write letters from your current self to your future self. I mean, there's a lot of people that journal and they write things down every day in kind of a notebook. I kind of envy those people because they're able to look back at timelines and, you know, life is just so fast and you're always, well, I should speak for myself. I'm always a future person. Like, well, now what am I going to do? Now what am I going to do? And I rarely look back. And I've got visions in my head of what happened in the past, but I don't journal and I've never really written letters to myself. But what I have done is these vision boards. So you just said this client sent you a picture of him in the boat, right? Well, I have a vision board and I've always had it and it's in my closet. So I go there every day for picking out what I'm going to wear, but that board is big. It's 20 by 40. And it's things that I cut out from magazines and things. And it's all about, you know, family and work. And this is what I want. So I would take pictures of, oh, that's what I want. And I cut out pictures of places that I wanted to travel. So every day I would see that board and I found that to be a great help. Bruce?
Yeah, I was hoping you would say that because we've talked about it before. I know you do vision boards. And some of these other things, you know, I also admire people, and I'm going to confess, some of the things that we're talking about that I think are good ideas, I don't do all these things myself either. You know, sometimes in our topic, the thing that we're talking about, I literally do everything that we're talking about. I practice it in my own life. But on this one, I honestly have to admit that I don't. And I'm going to make a goal to get better at some of these things because I've always loved your idea of a vision board, and I believe in it, but I don't actually do it. Now, I do have definite visions and definite goals. We've talked about this also. I write down goals every year. I write down goals for the calendar year and also longer-range goals, things over the next 3 to 5 years, and I write that down and I review that religiously, and that's kind of going part of the way, but it's not the same as this vision board or this picture of my client of himself in a boat. I don't do that, and people that journal, I don't do that. And again, I kind of admire both ideas, and maybe I'll implement them. But Peg, again, this is very personal. I haven't retired yet, and I've always said, and I mean this sincerely, I love what I do. So why would I stop doing something that I love? This job is not a paycheck to me. It's not even a job. It's a passion. It's a pursuit. It's a sense of identity. It's what I do. It's what I enjoy. But I also wonder if part of the reason I don't want to retire is I haven't yet visualized what it's going to look like if I don't do this anymore. And so... it's something I need to work on personally also, but it's something we talk to our clients about, and I think it's really it can be helpful in achieving your goals. The last one maybe we'll mention before we have to go to a break, and now we're getting into more traditional pragmatic things. We can do financial planning, forecasting, cash flow analysis. So, again, you can have these visions, you can have these goals, you can have these dreams, but are they realistic? How do we find out what's actually achievable? And that's where we, at the end, after we understand our clients and what's important, that's when we can actually dig into the actual numbers. Peg?
Yes, and I kind of mentioned it before, but we usually have two different people, and they're not opposites attract. We can tell you that. And one may have all the numbers and so proud of, you know, how much they have. But then when it comes to retiring and on the backside, they don't want to spend it. Like they've worked so hard to get to this level that they don't want to spend it. And so that is important to go through the goals of each person kind of independently. And I used to say, okay, pretend there's a wall between you. I need you to be very honest about what do you want? What does it look like for you in retirement? And on one hand, you know, there's a lot of grandchildren that come up and what they want to do for the grandchildren, and either financially or just spending time with them. It's things like that. So when we do put the numbers into something like a financial plan, then it starts to become real. And probably the best part of our job is giving them the confidence that they're on track or they're near on track, and, you know, just to see them light up, Bruce, you know, at that stage is very rewarding.
Absolutely. All right. Well, Susie, second half of the show, listeners can drive it. All financial questions, doesn't have to just be on this topic. Any and all financial questions, listeners drive the second half.
All right. Again, if you're listening and you have a question about your retirement, or as Bruce said, anything as it relates to investing and your money, the number to call is 651-461-9226. You can use that line to text a question at 651-461-9226. We'd also love you to call in if you'd like to do that. Again, 651-461-9226. It's your money. Back after. And welcome back to the second half of Your Money. I'm Susie Jones, along with the founder of Wealth Enhancement, Bruce Helmer, and Senior Vice President and Financial Advisor Peg Webb, talking about visualizing your financial future. And this is your chance listening to get involved in the big show. 651-461-9226. 651-461-9226, as Bruce mentioned. It does not have to be about visualizing your financial future. It can be on any topic that you want an answer for. So welcome back to both of you. Before we get to some of the calls and the texts and questions and comments, do you guys want to kind of recap what we've talked about thus far for people just tuning in?
Thank you, Susie Jones. Yeah, we've been talking about visualizing your financial future. What does it look like at retirement? What do you want to do? What's important to you? Where do you want to live? Communicating with you and your significant other, finding compromises. If you're wired a little bit differently, that's normal. We talked about it's not a choice between living for today and saving for tomorrow. You can do both at the same time. They're not mutually exclusive. And Peg, one of the things, you know, when we talk about visualizing or looking at the future, one of the things I always think about is goal setting based on your core values, based on what's important to you. And I don't know, I don't want to throw you a curveball if you're not ready to talk about it, but I always love how you talk about goal setting and you use the acronym SMART when it comes to goal setting.
Yes, thanks, Bruce. So in conjunction to, you know, seeing the person out at the end of the road, that's one thing. I mean, I was decades ago when I saw this person, and it was impactful, but yet that could have faded in a couple days. And so what in conjunction with that vision that I had to set goals. And when it comes to goals, you have to be really specific. You have to kind of narrow down what your goals are. And specific just means I can't just say, hey, 30 years from now or 40 years from now, I want to be this person. That's way too long of a time frame. So when you set your goals, you have to have more of a time frame. And how are you going to get there? Because for me, it was the financial freedom. It was, you know, having the choice of going and doing that instead of what I was doing, helping all the folks listening today. But so you need to be specific about the time frame. So then what I would do is I would have 1 year goals, 5 year goals, 10 year goals, and it gets harder and harder as time goes out. But you just, if you have a vision, you write it down. It makes it even stronger than just having something in your head. And they have to be measurable. So the goal can't say, hey, if I said, hey, I want to have $1 million in 1 year, no way. I mean, no, not even 100,000, right? You got to make a measurable where you feel so confident that you can meet the goals, but maybe you stretch yourself. And then are they achievable? You know, you got to make sure that it is reasonable and in a certain time frame. That's why I said 1 year, 3 year, 5 year, something like that. I actually would, part of that achievable is telling someone else who you, what your goals are. I mean, they kind of help you then. If you share that with somebody, they may help you with just comments along the way. It has to be relevant. You already brought this up, Bruce, in that, you know, it has to align with your values. You can't go way outside of the makeup of you and what wishes and wants you have and try to make some sort of goal happen. It has to be something that's already aligned to your values and your long-term objectives, like retiring at 55. And then time-based, it has to be some realistic, can't be real ambitious. You know, you have to have real clarity as to what you want to do in the short term, medium term, long term. So that actually the acronym is SMART, S-M-A-R-T, and that kind of reminds you of the things that you need to do to set really solid goals, be specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and time-based. So that we coach our clients on that over the decades as well.
I love that. I think it's profound, and I think we need to, even though we've talked about that before, we need to continue to talk about that every so often, because it's just one of those things that's a gold standard of what we do in helping our clients get what they want. All right, Susie, let's get to the listeners' questions.
All right, 651-461-9226. We have Pete on our line, our news line, calling today from Northeast Minneapolis. Good morning, Pete. You're on the air with Bruce and Peg.
Susie, you're wonderful. See, guys, I caught hell when I gave the church and school a bunch of money for their parking lot because it wasn't in an IRA that I could deduct from my income. By the way, I'm retired. How do I do a 401k to an IRA so I can take it off my income to be deductible from my, oh God, I don't know how to say it.
You guys can go ahead. Yeah, you guys can jump in.
Yeah, I know what Pete is asking here. First of all, thank you so much for listening. Thank you for calling. I agree with you. Susie is great. Susie's awesome. And Peg, for listeners, to give this context, what Pete is talking about, you know, most people today don't itemize their deductions. The standard deduction now is so high that most people don't have enough itemized deductions to equal or exceed the standard deduction. So when people are generous, like Pete is, giving to a church or school or whatever your favorite charity is, you're doing that out of the goodness of your heart. You're doing that for generosity. You're doing that to help others. But it used to be that you could also get some tax benefit for that generosity. And there's nothing wrong with receiving some tax benefit. And what Pete is saying, now you don't. And that's true for most people. But there is a way to do it. And that's what Pete was trying to articulate. What he's really talking about, Peg, is QCDs, qualified charitable deductions or qualified charitable distributions. You want to elaborate on that?
Yes, I would love to, because I just am so thrilled when they came out with this, the IRS, by the way. I'm not always thrilled with the IRS, but in this case, to be able to take your IRA, and by the way, your IRA, a lot of times you haven't paid tax on the deposits that you put in this IRA, and the growth on it is also taxable. So the entire account is taxable. Now, you can control when you take that money out, except when you start to become an age of 70 and a half. At 70 and a half, that was the age that you would have to start taking money out of your IRA. since then, they've changed the age that you are mandated to take out, and now it's 73 years old. But if with this provision of this QCD, you're able to give money to charity out right out of your IRA, and your IRA monies then would go direct to the charity. And you can decide how much money you want to give and how much money you want to give to each charity, up to $110,000. So what happens tax-wise is that that gift, if you will, does not show up on the front of your tax return, and that way you lessen the tax bracket that you are in. Bruce?
Yeah, and again, that's a perfect description. And Pete, I hope you're still listening, and everyone else that's listening. Pete mentioned, Peg, that he's retired. He did not mention if he's 73 or older and he's subject to required minimum distribution. But, of course, the key to this strategy is that you have to be eligible or of the age where you have to take required minimum distributions. And it's a brilliant, effective, efficient strategy for those people that are charitable anyway. They're going to be generous. They're going to give to their favorite charity or charities, and this is just the best way to do it. It's the best way to get a tax benefit for your generosity. But the key is it's got to be out of that required minimum distribution. Susie?
651-461-9226. A texter writes, can you talk about the spousal benefit for Social Security? Is it always based on the FRA of the larger benefit, or can it be 50% of the larger check, even if that check was started at the age of 70?
So, Peg, great question. And before we try to answer, I'm going to raise my hand and acknowledge that I don't always remember exactly how this works. Sometimes I have to look it up or get some help. But the point I want to make, and maybe you know, Peg, exactly how this works, is that Social Security, I think many people out there just assume when they reach a certain age, they're going to take their Social Security benefits. And the point I want to make is that it's not that simple. There's a lot of options, both in terms of when you start, if you're married, does your spouse also have their own history? Because there are strategies available where maybe you take 50% of your spouse's benefit and delay your own. And it's way more complicated than most people realize. And doing that analysis and trying to choose the right choices for you and your partner can make a big difference in the amount of retirement income that you receive. And I always tell people, Peg, it's never going to be an exact science. There's a lot that we know about clients, and based on what we know, we can do an analysis to try to enhance their chances of getting it right. But there's something that we don't know, the biggest of which being we don't know when you're going to die. So we have to use statistical averages and make our best guess or our most accurate assumption. But based on that, we enhance the chances of getting it right and maximizing that benefit. But it's way more complicated than people realize, right, Peg?
Well, there is a lot to it. And the reason that there's a lot to it is because the two people that you're dealing with are kind of like snowflakes. You always say that, Bruce. You know, their makeup is a little different based on age, you know, when they retired. And what I'm finding, Bruce, is because women really went in the workforce, the people that are taking Social Security now and beyond, let's say 67 now to, you know, 100 years old, a lot of those people, one maybe didn't work as much as the other. What we are starting to see, though, as we're doing these projections, is the younger people that are 67 and younger, they're both working full-time and they make about the same. So in this case, there is still a lot of questions about the spousal benefit. And a spousal benefit is always based on the full retirement age of the person that has the higher Social Security. And so what I found is people think that they can start taking the full half of the higher earner earlier than the FRA. And if you do that, because you can do that, but that's a permanent deduction on your Social Security. So what we can encourage people to do is as soon as the person that had the higher Social Security, that, you know, you take that 50% of that spouse, because it's going to be hard to make that up. You might as well start taking it now. And so we use what's a Social Security calculator, because it's not easy. And it's easier for us just to plug in the actual numbers and show you all these different scenarios. And then how does that fit into your financial portfolio that you already have? Some people choose to take Social Security early because they want a larger possible estate dollar amount for their children. There's people that want to wait till 70 years old because they want to utilize Social Security. Some people want to wait till 70 because they want it to go to their kids. But if they start early, let's say at 62, they actually want to utilize Social Security and not take as much money out of their portfolios. Bruce?
Yeah, well, I like what you closed with. And again, that was really good, Peg. But to just emphasize the last point that you made, again, another reason this is never an exact science is because people's own personal preferences are going to factor into the decision. Like you said, they might want to front load their income early in retirement. I've had situations, Peg, before, not infrequently, where I've demonstrated that if they wait a little longer to take their benefit, and if they live as long as we think they will or longer, they're going to have more net benefit over their lifetime. But they understand that and they agree with it, but they might still select to take it earlier because they want more income early at retirement, with the logical idea that we're going to do more things, travel more, spend more, check more things off our bucket list in our late 60s and early 70s than we are in our late 70s and early 80s. So even though they're going to get net less over a lifetime, they don't care because they want more income sooner. And or, like you said, legacy planning can be a big consideration. For those people that legacy planning isn't important, they might not care about taking money out of their investments early and delaying Social Security, while other people want to leave a big legacy for loved ones, so they want to take Social Security sooner so they don't have to spend their own resources so they can leave that to loved ones. Because the kids are not going to inherit your Social Security benefits. So, again, great question. Complicated, again, how the spousal benefits can work together and how we can get it right as a couple to maximize the benefit for that couple. It's way trickier than people realize. Susie?
All right, 651-461-9226. A texter writes, if your financial assets have beneficiaries and you have a TOD, transfer on a TODD, on real estate, and a will, are you protected from the need to enter probate upon death?
Great question. So, Susie, TODD, transfer on death deed. And, Peg, this is getting into the question again of estate planning or legacy planning. When we leave this world, whatever's left, assuming there's something left, how do we get it where we want it to go as efficiently and effectively as we can? And different assets are going to be treated very differently on how we do that planning. Peg?
Right. We continue to get this question because people tend to not want to have to go to an attorney and get this will done or this trust done or something like that. Can I name my beneficiaries directly on my assets? Usually, all the time, IRAs, Roth IRAs, those types of assets, we all name a beneficiary on those assets. It's done outside of your will, and then they'll go directly to the person that you name. Well, you might say, well, why wouldn't I just put my last will and testament as the beneficiary? No, you really, if you have children and it's very concrete who you want to give it to, it is best to just put the names on as a beneficiary. When it comes to real estate, that is probably the most confusing for clients, in that how do I possibly put a beneficiary on my house? Well, a transfer on death, a lot of, especially in Minnesota, I don't know all the states, but Minnesota has allowed you to go to your county courthouse and put a beneficiary on your house directly. So if you have a child that you want to leave it to, or you have a group of people that you want to leave it to, or I like the fact that you can just list them now through the county, or you would have to have that listed in your will, who's going to get that that asset. It can become a little complicated if, let's say, you have 5 or 7 kids or something like that, and you want to split that. Some people put down the executor so that they can then do the dividing up of the assets after the fact. Bruce?
Yeah, and again, we've talked about this before. The transfer on death deed is something that's relatively new in the estate planning, legacy planning world. I think it's fairly commonplace with estate planning attorneys now, but they used to use a document called a life estate, and I think that's all but become obsolete. But yeah, again, we probably don't have time for another question, so just to finish the thought on this one, like, what you have is and how you leave it effectively is going to be very different based on what the asset is. And it's pretty easy with, like Peg said, retirement accounts and other investment accounts, because you have a named beneficiary and things will pass directly to that beneficiary smoothly, seamlessly, no probate. But other assets where you can't name a beneficiary, whether it's real estate or whether you were Prince and you had a vault of unreleased music, it can get complicated and you need the appropriate legal documents. Susie, I know we're about out of time.
All right. I'm going to let our listeners know that we are out of time, but we do have a call and a text. So if people have not gotten their question answered, I invite you to call Wealth Enhancement directly at 1-888-6-ADVICE, 1-888-6-ADVICE. Sorry, we did not get to everyone. We have a lot of text questions, so if you want to email your text questions to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com, yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. A lot of great information. Have a great week for this.